But let's kick off this hour with Mr. Dango. A joint meeting of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, SCOPA, and the Portfolio Committee on Social Development today agreed to receive a follow-up briefing from the Interministerial Committee on Tuesday on the progress in addressing the finalization of the appointment of an entity that will pay social grants after the expiry date of the current contract with Cash Paymaster Services, which comes to an end in 2018 in March. The Joint Committee welcomed the statement presented by the IMC on the decision that it has taken to fast-track the introduction of an integrated payment system, which will be provided by the government through a partnership between the South African Social Security Agency, SASSA, and the South African Post Office. Joining me in studio to talk about this is the former Director General of the Department of Social Development, Zain Dango. We were meant to be joined by Mr. Themba Gordy from the Public Accounts Committee, SCOPA, but the understanding that we have is that they are still locked in that meeting. We're going to be reflecting on that discussion. So the same goes for Mr. Barnes, as well as Minister Jeff Khadebe, who's, of course, a central part of that interministerial committee, and he made the announcement of the deal that is being brokered. But I must say, I'm not sure if it's because I'm just old and I've been around for a long time, or whether I have a good memory, but when the deal or the hybrid model was announced earlier this morning, something triggered in my brain and it didn't sound entirely new. And I checked with someone who has a better institutional memory about these matters, because he spent over a decade with the department in capacities either as an advisor and, of course, just before his resignation as the Director General, is Zain Dango. And lo and behold, he said that's precisely the model that they had in fact been discussing. He was involved in those discussions with the Reserve Bank, as well as the then Director General in the Treasury, as well as other players with commercial banks and others. So Zain, thank you so much for coming through. I really appreciate it.
Good evening, Karima. Good to be back in the studio.
Now, the announcement by Jeff Khadebe about this hybrid model, is it what you guys were discussing then? And if so, take us through what exactly it means.
Okay, let me take you back to the discussions and the debates around the Constitutional Court requirements and the fact that SASSA had to submit what we call a full disclosure on how they're going to insource the grant payment system after the previous contract with CPS was declared invalid. That part of the delays in getting a proper document to the court was the absence of a firm plan. When we intervened in October 2016, we found that there was no firm plan.
Pretty much like now.
Yeah. So in terms of getting a firm plan in place, and I think we discussed this last year, around about the same time.
Yep. Like Groundhog Day.
Myself, the Director General of Treasury, the Deputy Governor of the Reserve Bank, the CEO of SASSA, established a technical task team, a government technical team.
Not work streams.
Not work stream. And we must make this very clear. Government work stream to develop a firm plan, because what we needed to do was to go to the Concord and present a firm plan. And based on the firm plan for the future, argue what the short-term emergency measures would be. The firm plan essentially was this hybrid plan. The firm plan was said we will use the terminology we used then was open architecture. Mm. We will use we'll use all the banks, including SAPO, to pay grant recipients through electronic means, and use that model as a way of actually capacitating SAPO over time to become a state bank. At the same time, to encourage reforms within the financial sector in encouraging the banks to go to more remote areas where they are not presently. We also discussed conceptually at that point that even cooperative banks could come into the space. But clearly SAPO was part of the architecture of our discussions. Now, and then the small cash, we also talked about then a cash tender for the far more remote areas. And this is what the hybrid model really means. So that was our firm plan, which was included in the Concord submission, which the minister had then, Concord document, which was submitted by the CEO of SASA, and the minister withdrew it. But that was the firm plan. So we're back there now. Mm. We're now using what was our long-term plan, and it's now the emergency plan.
Now, how did we go from this plan being announced today by Chief Khadebe to Paul Bengu a few weeks ago telling the committee, can we please come back in November because we've got nothing to report? And then, of course, Freedom Under Law made the obvious point saying if they were following and implementing what the court had ordered them to do, they would be running around screaming from the hilltops saying what exactly their plan was. So what do you think has been the tipping factor? We know throughout reports today that the Treasury's investigation into this matter found that SASA was in fact very dismissive of the SAPU plan. We know, of course, that Mark Barnes had said, let's bygones be bygones. The most important thing is there's an acceptance now that SAPU can actually play a role. Let's get the process going. Are we still sitting with a recalcitrant minister, with a lack of political will, with an insistence to have CPS as part of this process? Or do you think that, you know, a corner was turned in the negotiations between then and now?
Well, I think the fact that, you know, I was watching the SCOPA negotiations and discussions, and Vincent Smith hit the nail on the head when he said, when the letter of review was tabled, and he asked, why do you need a letter of review when you have a deviation in place? And the content of the letter of review from SASA was asking to review the partnership and the procurement process. And this is what Treasury responded to, I think, and presented to the IMC, was the fact that they reviewed the process.
Yes.
And in reviewing the process, found that the procurement process, the bid adjudication committee and the BAC possibly did not follow the correct processes by consider the CSIR report, properly in scoring SAPO's capabilities. And that is why the recommendations they've made is that the process was flawed, and they questioned, in essence. I don't have the detail of the letter, but I understand that they questioned the process that was followed. In fact, that the scoring was done before the presentation of the CSIR findings were made to the BEC. So clearly they did not consider the fact that the CSIR was employed by SASA at a particular cost to look at the capacity of SAPO. So there's again, either miscommunication or there's malfeasance.
No, I mean, it's a fine line because as you're explaining, I mean, it's almost as if someone has pressed the pause button and then pressed repeat, because the very same thing, the obfuscation, the misinformation, the lack of clarity, is all part of, the same plan again. Mm. And then, of course, the important point you made here is that the CSIR was actually contracted and paid for. Mm. But that information was ignored. And now we're not sure whether it was willfully ignored or whether there was a communication issue. The point here is that you have a minister constantly and SASA constantly being forced by the oversight processes to do the right thing. Mm. They do the right thing, and at some point, the minister intervenes almost imperially, stops the processes, and we go back to a set of arrangements that somehow puts CPS back on track. She did it through the work streams. Here we see again the information that would have enabled the decision, the officials to make a decision about the capacity and the capability of SAPO was either withheld, or they didn't read it, or they were instructed to ignore it. And this is the issue that many people don't understand, saying, why is the minister able to directly intervene in the way that she does when she's meant to be at an arm's length? We're supposed to have SASA drive this process. That's the implementation, and of course also this determination to get to CPS.
So, what triggered my resignation was the fact that I argued, and there's still a dispute of facts that will be taken further in an inquiry in January. But I resigned in essence because I felt that there was a parallel decision-making process that reported directly to the minister, undermining the proper governance and decision-making processes, including, in fact, the withdrawal of the Concord document, which laid the firm plan in place, plan that was developed by a government technical team and people who've been working in that space for a long time, from social security policy to banking, to cash payment services. Similarly, this time, Mr. Magwaza fired the work streams, but you find the same process taking place. So somewhere, the same kind of advice is coming through. We're not sure where that's coming from, because what you find what I've heard is that at the National Treasury's report pointed out that the BCN SASSA's procurement, or the making a decision on the contract, took more than 60 days.
Yes.
Again, there was delayed time, unnecessary waste of time when we're facing an emergency.
Yes. A self-inflicted crisis.
Emergency process again. And then the opposite of what happened last year. Last year we were saying in October, let's go and open tender let's call all the banks. This year they're saying, and then that was, now we need an extension to CPS. Now the argument is, let's go and open tender.
Yes.
Because
SAPO is now in play, and you just need a memorandum of understanding between these organizations.
And SAPO was, I think my view is, and I haven't spoken to them in a while, but my view was that, I reviewed the presentation given to me by SAPO in December last year. And even there, SAPO was making the point that, their banking capabilities, the fact that they've been part of the NPS system for many, many, many years, the fact that they've got about 4 million clients, their capabilities, and they were always willing to work with other banks in an open architecture system. So I met with the DG of the Post of the Department of Telecommunications then, and they were representatives from both the Post Office and SAPO. So in just reviewing all of this, the will was there from SAPO to work within the open architecture model,
mm-hmm.
And that's where we're coming back now, because what National Treasury and the recommended to the IMC and the IMC agreed to is essentially the open architecture model. They're calling it the hybrid model, but the hybrid model means meeting with the Banking Association of South Africa to look at whether they can come in, which means the Reserve Bank has to come in. It means reestablishing the team that we had set up last year that was not utilized.
Unbelievable.
It's back in play now. And that the process, from the news reports, is that the IMC will take charge of this process, set up a team so that this hybrid plan is finalized by next Friday,
mm-hmm.
by the players that need to be there, which is the South African Reserve Bank, National Treasury, the Department of Social Development, and of course, SASSA.
Now, I remember when I spoke with Minister Jeff Radebe last year, I was the person who I had sight of the letter that the finance minister had sent you guys with the six options. And then, of course, it also became clear that there was an IMC meeting. At that time, it was Pravin Gordhan, a whole range of other ministers, but Minister Radebe as well. I spoke with Minister Radebe. In fact, he stepped out of the meeting. This program was still happening on a Sunday, and he came onto the show to explain what is going to happen. And there was also quite a lot of excitement that we had finally gotten to a point. I felt, in many ways, this morning's announcement was pretty much the same thing. And now, of course, everyone is locked in. Mm. Now, between the announcement being made earlier this morning and the detail that we see coming out with the process taking over 60 days, the way in which the BAC process and the procurement process simply ignored either the CSIR report or read it and felt that it's talking nonsense, and that there is another hand moving in a parallel process again. I must say, I'm not optimistic that next week we're going to have a deal, because quite frankly, we don't even have to go to last week. Nothing has changed, Zane, from now till last year. I mean, the very same set of circumstances that preceded your resignation obtains. The only thing that's not happening is the drama is playing out in Parliament instead of the Constitutional Court.
Yes, and it may end up back in the Constitutional Court, because the Constitutional Court has oversight over this entire process through the expert panel. And the expert panel, apparently in their reporting, is quite unhappy with the manner in which SASSA engaged with them.
Absolutely.
As well. So this may well end up back in the Constitutional Court. I think at this point it is about leadership.
Mm.
Somebody's got to say, we're taking charge of this process. We essentially taking it out of the hands of the Minister of Social Development. The IMC will lead this process. And which was the intention. And then I think with when you make the president the chairperson of an IMC of this nature, it's not going to meet as often as it should have. And I think that's part of the problem.
Now, I heard Namizili Boy this afternoon, and I know you heard him too, because you were in the car and we were chatting about you coming onto this show. And there seems to be an insistence that the president must intervene here.
Mm.
But we know it is a meeting with the president and with Mr. Michael Hulley. And after that it appears as if this second set of instructions and parallel processes started moving at quite a rapid speed, and your entire process started coming undone. How advisable is it then to call for the president to intervene in this matter when a meeting with the president involving the minister, Mr. Hulley, and senior members of SASSA is precisely what precipitated a secondary process? And the president last week in the House was asked about Minister Dlamini, and he has absolutely no intentions of removing her. In fact, he believes she's the only person that can sort this out.
See, I think that parallel process started long before that weekend consultation, long before that. What emerged after that, as I put in my affidavit, was that a new approach was decided upon, and there was new legal advice given that, and this is what the dispute of facts that will be tested in January.
Yes.
That SASSA did not have to go to the Constitutional Court. And of course, the Constitutional Court found that SASSA was disingenuous, in thinking that they did not have to go to make a full disclosure to the Constitutional Court, based on a previous report that they made in 2015, where they had set goals for insourcing, and none of those goals were met. But at this point, the IMC was set up immediately after the Constitutional Court.
Yes.
That IMC should have been allowed to continue its work, meet regularly, and ensure that the decision on a firm plan, as discussed by the government technical task team, was implemented. What we saw is, after my resignation, continuing drama with the CEO, the CEO then leaving in June, but before then, making sure that some of the elements of the open architecture solution was put in place. For example, the letter of intent
to the post office.
And the processes then, after he left, seems to have delayed quite considerably in terms of continuing discussions.
Then bizarrely, Bengu saying to the committee, we've got nothing to report. You know, one would have thought that they would have been rushing to try and meet with the deadline as it continues to loom. Let me go into the questions, Zane, about your unfinished business, so to speak, with the department and with the minister. You resigned. You put an affidavit together. Take us through where the process is at. You mentioned earlier that the matter will be ventilated in January. What is the timeline? How do we get there?
Look, I think the matter will be heard between the 22nd and 25th of January. The issue will be the dispute of facts between the minister's version of what happened and my version as per my affidavit, and Mr. Magwaza's version as per his affidavit. So as far as we know, we are basically the judge's witnesses, which is Justice Noepe. We're not sure who the other witnesses will be for
the minister.
The minister, presumably the contract, the person running the
work streams.
But the entire issue will then be ventilated in January over an entire week between the 22nd and the 25th.
And where, which court will this be heard in?
Well, it will be held in the chambers, in Madrid of Justice Noepe.
Okay.
Now,
just in terms of the fact that we now have a new administration in Treasury. We have, obviously, Dondo Mohajani is still there, but you dealt with Lungisa. You dealt, of course, with Pravin. We have now Malusi Gigaba. We have Mohajani now being the DG. Are you confident that this Treasury and this Finance Ministry is going to be able to be as firm and as clear on the constitutional and legal obligations that the department and SASSA has to adhere to ensure that the permanent plan is within the framework of the law, within the framework of the recommendations as set out by the Constitutional Court?
Look, I can just give you some timelines. I mean, SASSA asked for a deviation on 29th of June to engage with the post office after engaging with SAPO. They were given that deviation on the 4th of July, very quickly. And National Treasury doesn't just easily give
deviation.
So they considered this in the interest of a preferred solution of a government-to-government partnership and bringing in other players in a hybrid model then already. So they also took into consideration the findings of the High Court in 1999 when the very CPS took 2009 when the very CPS took SASSA to court for trying to engage SAPO already then. So for me, that was a clear intention of a continuation. Remember, in our technical team, we had the highest, I mean, and the current DG was the actual technical person on our team.
So he's completely familiar with the issues.
Completely familiar with the issues. And I think the kind of letter that we saw, or the presentation that they made to the IMC today confirmed that they're still...
They're holding the line.
They're holding the line.
Yeah.
I can't speak for the minister, but I can definitely speak for, because, I mean, I haven't engaged with the minister, but I can definitely speak for the DG, and I'm sure the DG is consulting his minister about this, but they're definitely holding the line based on the recommendations that they've made. I would just want to know whether they have been engaged over the last 6 months or not, because clearly the SAB has not been engaged. DSD has not been engaged in the manner that DSD, the policy unit,
ought to have been
engaged. The National Treasury should have been engaged right on an ongoing basis. The team that we put in place between myself and Fuzile should have been allowed to continue to do their work from January, working with the IMC, a technical committee chaired by the DG in the presidency.
Yeah. All right, Zane, that is where we will leave it for now. Just for our listeners, we did put in a request for the Director General. We were made to understand that he is traveling with the ministers out of the country. I did check with Treasury, in fact, with Ishmael Mamoniant. We were directed to the IMC. All communications on this matter is now being dealt with by the IMC, and the people communicating for the IMC is GCIS, and all of these people are locked into meetings. But of course, we will continue to keep the spotlight on this. We have a deadline for next Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, we have Zane's matter being ventilated in January. So we will keep you up to speed with developments, both in terms of the new system and the new deal as it has been announced today, as well as what happens in the more longer term in terms of the culpability and the responsibility ultimately that Batabile Dlamini ought to be taking for the self-inflicted crisis that we see around social grants.